Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, January 10th, 2019. We'll start with a story titled Committee Talks Landfill Solar Gardens, Rescue Mission Concerned About RR Project. And this is written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville. February will mark the end of a six-month trial of the temporary shutdown of the H&L Landfill Lachate Collection System. Danville Community Development Director David Schnell told Alderman Tuesday night the trial period had been successful and the landfill could be permanently shut down. This could save the city $500,000 to $600,000 in needed repairs, he said. Alderman in July of 2018 authorized a second amendment of the H&L Landfill Consent Decree to allow for the temporary shutdown of the leachate liquid passing through a landfill collection system, according to the revised operation and maintenance manual approved by the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency. The landfill is located on Greenwood Cemetery Road. This allowed for a trial period shutdown of the landfill collection system. Associated costs with the work are paid from the landfill remediation fund. The city has been incurring expenses for the operation of the H&L landfill remediation efforts under a consent decree between the state and the city since 1991. The consent decree was amended in 2002 after phases 1 and 2 of the required remediation activities were completed. Phase 2 included construction of an on-site leachate collection system, which needs significant repairs. Based on the low amounts of contaminants in that, the city proposed additional studies to determine if the collection system was still needed for remediation, according to city officials. Findings from an engineering study indicated the city may no longer be pumping through its collection system, but is likely only pumping groundwater and infiltrated stormwater. The temporary shutdown was to determine if that's the case. In other discussions at Tuesday night's Public Works Committee meeting, the landfill and other sites such as the former Heatcraft site, airport, and elsewhere were mentioned as possible locations for solar gardens. Companies are looking at sites near electrical substations. Ward 7 Alderman Lloyd Randall said he will not support Novell Energy Solutions requests for special use permits for community solar gardens in the area of Old Ottawa Road west of Danville due to residents not wanting it. The permits were recommended for denial by the Zoning Commission. The Danville City Council is expected to act on the permits next week. Resident Vince Kors said the city needs to protect residents from the solar gardens. He said he's not against them, but is against the idea of the developers doing anything they want. Kors pointed out what a resident at the Zoning Commission said. Champaign has a 30-plus page ordinance regulating solar gardens, but Danville is about 5 pages long. I don't think the ordinance as it stands does that, Kors said about protecting residents enough. Other audience comments Tuesday night included from Linda Jones, co-founder of the Danville Rescue Mission, with her husband Jerry. Jones said she'd heard the city was looking to buy the Rescue Mission building at Fairchild and Bowman to possibly construct another overpass over Bowman Avenue railroad tracks. In September of 2018, the Danville City Council approved a $1.5 million agreement and appropriating $2 million in motor fuel tax funds for the Bowman Avenue Railroad Crossings project. The Phase 1 Engineering Services Agreement with Hansen Professional Services of Springfield is to look at two grade separation structures to carry Bowman Avenue over or under the Norfolk Southern and CSX railroads. The study area of Bowman is the two railroad crossings between Williams and Voorhees Street. Schnell has said if the project would negatively affect businesses and residents, relocation could be possible. Jones said they don't want to move the rescue mission. It's in an ideal spot, she said. Last month, the mission served almost 4,300 meals, and last year, its program served 200 men. I don't want to move that building, Jones said, adding that every city has railroad tracks to deal with. If another overpass is built in that area, it would bury several businesses and the neighborhood, and it would look like an inner city instead of a nice neighborhood, she added. Next story is titled Food Distribution Set at Southview, and this is written by Carol Rome in Danville. Eastern Illinois Food Bank's Food Mobile will be available Saturday morning at a brand new site in Danville. Eastern Illinois Food Bank will distribute food to area families from 10 to 11:30 a.m. on Saturday at Southview Upper Elementary School at 133 East 9th Street. The Food Mobile distribution will take place rain, snow, or shine because it will be in the school's cafetorium. This is our first time at this location, Eastern Illinois Food Bank Partnership Manager Ashley Salinetro said Wednesday. Since July of 2018, this Food Mobile has been making the rounds at other sites in Vermilion County, including Georgetown, Hoopston, Ridge Farm, and Rossville. This is our first one in Danville, she said. Someone reached out to us and asked how we could help, how we could get a distribution in Danville. Salinetro said Southview was chosen as a distribution site for Danville because the parking is abundant and there is plenty of room to set up the tables and get everyone in the door and in the door and indoors. The Danville site will be added to the Food Mobile schedule. It won't be monthly, it will be every few months, she said, of the frequency of the Danville distribution. The Food Mobile is a mobile food pantry where low-income individuals, families, and senior citizens may receive free food and other grocery products. We usually have peanut butter, jelly, canned goods, bread, and produce, Salinetro said. What's donated is what doesn't sell in the stores. It's usually expensive bread and a lot of organic products. Our main goal is to get USDA commodities out through Feeding America to people in the 18 counties we serve, she said. All Vermilion County residents who meet household income eligibility guidelines are welcome to participate in Saturday's distribution. Those attending are asked to bring sturdy boxes, carts, wagons, or bags to carry the food. We are projecting 200 households to come through this Saturday, Salinetro said, adding that each household could consist of multiple members. Anyone unable to attend Saturday's distribution due to a disability may send someone to pick up food on his or her behalf. The designated person must know that person's name, address, and number of members in the household. To be eligible, a household must have an income at or below 185% of the federal poverty level, or about $3,793 per month for a family of four. When they sign in, they will self-attest that they meet the income requirements, she said. Maximum monthly income per eligible household is one person is $1,859, two people is $2,504, three people is $3,148, four is $3,793, five is $4,437, six is $5,081, seven is $5,726, and eight is $6,370. For each additional household member beyond eight, add another $644. Danville District 118 is in charge of finding 25 volunteers to help with Saturday's distribution. It's great to see the community come together and volunteer at a distribution event, Salinetro said. It's a warm experience to see how grateful the individuals are who receive the food. A lot of people, they're there because they need the food, she said. It takes a lot of courage to go there. We're human, it's a pride thing, but they're there because they really need it, she said. The Food Mobile distribution comes at a critical moment for area residents. Data released by Feeding America, the nation's network of food banks, shows that 14% of people in eastern Illinois are considered food insecure, which means they sometimes lack adequate access to food. Also, nearly 20% of children are food insecure, according to Hunger America. Eastern Illinois Food Bank works to alleviate hunger in eastern Illinois through cooperation with a network of food pantries, agencies, and other programs, such as the Food Mobile program. The food bank distributes donated and discounted food throughout an 18-county service area in cooperation with more than 160 member agencies and programs. Through these agencies, the food bank provides food to more than 120,000 different men, women, and children each year. Okay, the next story is titled Better Than Honey. Kids enjoy time with Winnie the Pooh, and this is written by Mary Wyckoff in Westville. And there's a picture of Amelia Lane, who is 2 years old, tries to put a crayon in Tigger's hand Wednesday while coloring at the Westville Public Library. Watching her are her mother Hannah Lane and sister Hadley, who is 17 months old. And this is in Westville. For about an hour, the Westville Public Library magically became the 100-acre wood as children learned all about Winnie the Pooh and his friends. The preschoolers colored pictures, heard Pooh stories, made a craft, and enjoyed a little smackerel of something, as the silly old bear would say, apple juice and graham cracker bears. On the first Wednesday of each month, the library has a program at 10 a.m. featuring a story, craft, and activity for ages 2 to 5 years old. There's a different theme every month, library employee Angel McNear said. They seem to love it. The program usually attracts about 20 children as well as their adult relatives, she said. The library also shows a movie at 2 p.m. on the first Wednesday, which is geared toward adults. Some patrons bring refreshments, McNear said, adding, "We're blessed with people who bake for us." Wednesday's Pooh program featured books by A.A. Milne, read by library employee Sierra Googe, that chronicle the adventures of Christopher Robin, Eeyore, Tigger, Piglet, Roo, and, of course, Pooh Bear. Although the books were published in the 1920s, the stories still resonate with children, and the inspirational sayings appeal to adults. The children at the Wednesday program had fun coloring and making crafts, while the adults had words of praise for the library. "The library is wonderful," said Grace Newman, who brought her niece Quinn Furnish, who is 3. Quinn is a huge fan. She talks about it all the time. Ashley Baldwin brought 3 children who are regulars. The preschool program are always full with youngsters, she said. Little Amelia Lane, who is 2, was wearing a dress with a Winnie the Pooh design and brought her stuffed Tigger along. "We're big Winnie the Pooh fans," her mother, Hannah Lane, said. Taffy Smith, along with 3-year-old Vivian, said, "We love this library. We spend a lot of time here. The family lives nearby and walks to the library for special events such as Christmas and trick-or-treat parties. In fact, they use the library so much that they know the staff and don't even have to show their membership card," Smith said. "It's awesome," she added. Okay, we'll run through the obituaries. Alma H. Bolton, 75, of Danville, passed away at 5:25 p.m. Tuesday, January 8th, at her home. Alma's wishes was for cremation. Private family services will be held. The Robeson Chapel in Catlin, Illinois, is assisting the family with the arrangements. Carl Wayne Hasty, Jr., 79, passed away January 7th at Riverside Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. A celebration of life service will take place at 2:30 p.m. on Friday, January 11th in the Summit Room at Willow Brook at Delaware Run, 100 Delaware Crossing in Delaware, Ohio. The Snyder Rodman Funeral Home Center of Delaware, Ohio, is assisting the family. James Larry Wilson died on January 4th, 2019 at Glenshire Nursing and Rehabilitation Center in Richton Park, Illinois. Funeral services will commence at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, January 12th at Second Baptist Church at 940 North Franklin Street in Danville. Visitation will be from 9 until the time of the service. Pastor Frederick Cohen officiating. Interment will be at Spring Hill Cemetery. Visitation will be from 1 to 5 p.m. with the family present from 4 to 5 p.m. on Friday, January 11th at Leek & Sons Funeral Home at 304 East William Street in Danville. Jamie Edward J. Miller Smith, 46, passed away on Sunday, January 6th at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. A homecoming celebration will commence at noon on Saturday, January 12th at Lighthouse Ministries at 122 Ohio Street in Danville. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. until the time of the service. Officiating Pastor Bobby Keys. Interment will be at Sandhill Memorial Cemetery. Robert E. Messenger, 88, of Danville, passed away at 3:05 p.m. on January 7th at his home. a celebration of life will be at 10 a.m. Friday, January 11th at Sunset Funeral Home at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Miles Clark will officiate. Burial will be in Danville National Cemetery with military rights accorded by American Legion Post 210. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, January 10th at the funeral home. Memorials are requested to the Alzheimer's Association. Charlotte Ann Stett, 77, of Danville, passed away at 1:50 p.m. Tuesday, January 8th in the emergency room at the OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Funeral services are at 10 a.m. Saturday, January 12th at Calvary Baptist Church in Danville. Officiating Pastor Don Hessler. Burial in Resurrection Cemetery in Danville. Visitation from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, January 11th at Calvary Baptist Church. Memorials to the Calvary Baptist Church or the Humane Society. James Bernard Hardy, 83, of Danville, passed away at 6:14 a.m. Tuesday, January 8th at Pleasant Meadows Senior Living in Christmas. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday at Robeson Chapel in Catlin. Private family burial will be in Spring Hill Cemetery in Danville. Memorials to Alzheimer's Research in his memory. Myrna Johnson, 83, of Lake Worth, Florida, originally from Danville, Georgetown, and Warrensburg, passed away at home. Services will be from 11 a.m. Saturday, January 12th at the Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton, Illinois, with Reverend Randy Myers officiating. Burial will follow at Pleasant Valley Cemetery in Kinney, Illinois. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. on Saturday, January 12th at the funeral home. Memorials may be directed to American Heart Association. Robert Bob Gerald, 65, of Danville, formerly of Seattle, Washington, passed away in the comfort of his home on December 13, 2018. A celebration of life memorial will be at 1 p.m. on January 12th at Wolf Creek Golf Course at 2521 Perrysville Road in Danville. Military rights will be accorded by American Legion Post 210 Honor Guards following services. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville is assisting the family. Michael Wagner, 70, of Danville, died Monday, January 7th, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home at 10 East William Street in Danville. And Clifford Jolly, 92, of Fairmount, died at 3:40 a.m. on Wednesday, January 9th, at Liberty Village in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Robeson Chapel at 103 Douglas Street in Catlin. Okay, the next story is titled Shot Fired During Armed Robbery, and this is in Danville, written by a staffed reporter. An armed robbery of one business and an attempt of another left employees fearing for their lives in Danville Tuesday evening. Police responded to the first incident at 8:33 p.m. in the 700 block of Cleveland to a call of an attempted armed robbery, according to a press release from the paper. From Commander Joshua Webb of the Danville Police Department. Officers contacted the victim, a Green Jade delivery driver, who said he was delivering food order when he was approached by three male black subjects. All three were wearing dark clothing. One of the men displayed a handgun and demanded money. When he attempted to flee, he heard a gunshot and the window of his vehicle shattered. No items were taken, however, the victim suffered laceration to his hand. At 9:41 p.m., police then responded to Casey's General Store at 845 East 4E Street for an armed robbery that had just occurred. Several employees said a man entered the store and appeared to be armed with a handgun. He took an undisclosed amount of cash from the register and fled on foot. He was last seen running north from the area. The suspect was wearing a blue hooded sweatshirt, blue pants, and a ski mask over his face. There were no injuries reported. At this time, there is nothing to indicate these incidents are related, Webb said in the release. The investigation into these incident continues and no other information is being released at this time. Anyone with information regarding these crimes is asked to call Danville Police at 217-431-2250 or Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-TIPS. Okay, well, there's not a lot of local news today, which I guess is good. Everything's good, huh? So I'll read a heartwarming story out of Carbondale. It's called Lost Ring Returns to Woman After 30 Years, and this is written by an Isaac Smith in Carbondale. Nathan Duffield has found a lot of junk on the river, sunglasses that are usually too scratched to be used, fishing lures, pocket knives, mostly things that don't float when someone's boat flips. But about 20 years ago, he found a ring. The stone was rectangular cut and blue, set in white gold with the graduation year 1977 on prominent display around the blue centerpiece, along with the initial G to the left and R to the right. Duffield of Murfreesboro said when he was around 9 years old, he and his family packed up for their yearly trip to camp and float along a river in Missouri. This year it was the current river near Van Buren. As he explored the bank, the glint of the ring caught his eye and he picked it up. Aside from a flat spot on the bottom, he said it was in great shape, but he knew someone would want it back. The ring had made its way to the bottom of the river a decade before when Gina Dancer was babysitting her younger brother Jacob along the river. They lived not far from there, around Van Buren, Missouri. As she put on sunscreen, Jacob, making a rash decision the way toddlers do, picked the ring up off Dancer's towel and tossed it like any other stone into the river. To say Dancer was upset would be an understatement. She had worked to pay for the ring herself. In the 3 decades since she lost the ring, she has never forgotten it. In fact, it came up again in late August as Dancer and her daughter, Ashley Ramsey, were making their regular 600-mile trip to the Mayo Clinic. Dancer is ill. Ramsey said her mother has just 6 months to live. She said, "Boy, I wish I had my class ring to leave you," Dancer recalled for her mother saying in the car. 2 weeks later, Ramsey was working her bartending job in Branson when she got a text from her cousin asking if her mom ever lost a class ring. Someone on Facebook had posted about finding a ring decades ago and was looking for its owner. "I was able to describe it to him completely," she said. "Sure enough, it was a match. It was only at the end of this past summer that Duffield, 39, decided to join Facebook. He found pages dedicated to his favorite places and things, namely one about foraging for edibles in Missouri and vacationing along the Jack's Fork and current rivers. He said he noticed someone on one of those pages post about finding a lost wedding ring, and it made him recall that class ring he'd kept all these years that was still in his mother's jewelry box. He made a post with the description and within 2 hours was connected with Ramsey. After hearing Ramsey describe the ring in detail, he had one thing to say: I knew it was her. Ramsey said she text messaged her mom right away. "I think we have found your class ring," she told her. "No possible way. It's been 30 years," Dancer replied, but Ramsey said she knew it was the one. This was in early September. After some scheduling, the two parties arranged to meet. With their illness, Dancer doesn't travel, so Duffield decided to take it all the way to Branson. "After having it this long, I'd just as soon give it to her just to see her reaction," he said. Earlier this month, Duffield made the trip to Missouri to make the connection 3 decades in the making. "He offered to do it for nothing," Ramsey said of Duffield. However, she said she couldn't let that happen, so she paid for his lunch, hotel room, and got him tickets to a show in Branson for the trouble of bringing it all the way to them. There wasn't a dry eye in the house when Duffield arrived with the ring. "Nathan was crying, Mom was crying, I was crying," Ramsey remembered. "The ring fit perfectly." Ramsey said her mom hasn't taken it off since getting it back. After visiting with the family for a bit, Duffield said he had another strange realization. "I can almost guarantee that we met before," he said. Duffeld found out that Dancer owned a restaurant in Van Buren, likely the only one in town when he and his family would vacation there. Duffeld said there's a good possibility Dancer served her a cheeseburger. That Duffeld kept the ring despite being able to do any number of things with it, including pawn it. These last 20 years, it is remarkable to Ramsey and her mother. We are in awe of him, she said. The timing couldn't have been better. The fact that it was back in her possession before she passed away was just phenomenal, Ramsey said. Ramsey and her mother are sure the meeting was a God thing, but Duffeld isn't too sure. He said he's not a religious man, but noted that it makes you wonder. Okay, now that I got all the tears out of my eyes, I was about ready to cry with that one too. So we'll go through some community briefs. In Danville, the Beauty of Hope. The Beauty of Hope benefit pageant will have its 7th annual meet and greet from 1 to 4 p.m. on Saturday at Crossroads Christian Church. The nonprofit pageant raises money for the American Cancer Society. Learn more at www.beautyofhopepageants.com. And band to play. Left 4 Dead Band will play from 7:30 to 11:30 Saturday evening at the Knights of Columbus at 310 Bryan Street, Bryan Avenue. This band features all acoustical guitars. All are welcome. And classmates to meet. The class of 1959 lunch brunch will meet from 11 to 1 p.m. January 17th at Jocko's Pizza Inn. Participants should bring personal care items to donate. And in Covington, Indiana, learn about plants. Purdue University Extension and University of Illinois Extension will host their annual Bi-State Gardening Conference on January 22nd at the Beef House Restaurant at 16501 Indiana State Road 63. Registration begins at 5:30 p.m. EST time, and the presenters will begin at 6:45 p.m. EST time, following a Beef House dinner. Presentations include The Green Pathway to Invasion, Invasive Plants and Landscaping by Chris Evans, University of Illinois Extension Forester, and Gardening Under the Influence of Myths by Bill Knight, a.k.a. The Mad Botanist. Cost is $20, which includes dinner, payable online or at the door. Pre-register by January 15th, calling 765-492-5330 or online at go.illinois.edu/bystate. And in Potomac, the Legion plans a meal. Harry Carpenter, American Legion Post 428 at 101 North Grant Street, plans a fish and chicken fry from 4:30 to 7 p.m. Saturday at the Post. Just a couple minutes, so I'll go through some daily calendar events going on. At the Lions Club in Danville at noon at Spanky's Banquet Hall at 409 East Main Street, and Narcotics Anonymous at 9 a.m. at New Directions at 153 North Vermilion Street, and at 5:45 p.m. at Prairie Center at 1222 East Voorhees Street. Alcoholics Anonymous is at 6:30 p.m. at Aces Building at 119 North Vermilion, and the Lynch Area Fire Protection District has a meeting at 7 p.m. at Station 1 at 2315 Perryville Road. And Stone Arch Bridge Association meets at 7 p.m. at the Garden at 111 South Buchanan Street. And in Bismarck, the Fire Protection District, Bismarck Men's Club is at 7:30 p.m. at the Men's Club. And in Catlin is the Ileana Antique Automobile Club, 6 p.m. at the Town Hall. And in Georgetown is the Georgetown Ladies Community Club at 7 p.m. at the Georgetown Public Library. And in Potomac, the Bluegrass Fire Protection District is at 7 p.m. at 14th Station 1. And in Tilton, the NAR Anon is at 7:30 at the Senior Center at 607 West 14th Street. And in Westville is Westville Tops at 9:30 a.m. at the library at 233 South State Street. So that'll be it for today, Thursday, January 10th, 2019. It sure did get cold, didn't it? So try to stay warm. Bundle up out there because it's pretty windy, and get ready for that snow on Saturday. So hope you all have a good week, and hopefully I'll see you again next week. Take care. Bye.